listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Now that my voice is finally back, we're in full swing. We start off this week with Stephanie Rosenblum, a fabulous travel journalist from the New York Times. Stephanie wrote her first book recently, and we have her on the show this week to discuss it. She was also nice enough to sign 5 copies of her book for us. So if you check out our website, milestogo.boardingarea.com, you'll see how you can enter to win a free signed copy of her book. Won't cost you a dime. We'll cover shipping and everything. Show up right at your door. The book covers some of my favorite cities to travel to. Well, I won't spoil the whole interview. You'll hear more about it in just a minute. Jen joins me this week again to talk about how to get free lift tickets for your next ski trip. And we wrap up with Richard Kerr of Award Travel 101. I always have fun when Richard joins us. Instead of going over the critical points today, we're talking about what's going right in the world of airlines and hotels. And that's an interesting one. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll do me a favor and share it with a friend. Make sure you subscribe to the show so you get our new episodes for free as soon as they're available each week. It's easy to do, whether you're listening in Apple Podcasts or wherever great podcasts are found. And be sure to drop us a line and let us know who we should have on for future episodes and what questions we can help you answer. We'll try and answer your question in a future episode. You can email me at ed@pizzainmotion.com, and you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, by searching for Miles to Go. We're going to step away for a quick break and be back with Stephanie Rosenblum from the New York Times to talk Paris, Istanbul, New York, and how she loves to travel. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and today, for the first time on the podcast, I've got Stephanie Rosenblum with me. Stephanie and I met a number of years ago. She was covering one of our crazy aviation geek trips for the New York Times, and since then, we've stayed in touch over the years. I was actually lucky enough to have her tour me around New York Times headquarters, which was an awesome special trip that you can read about on my blog. But today, the reason we're bringing her on, I'm way overdue for having her on. She published her first book just a few months ago called Alone Time, 4 Seasons, 4 Cities, and the Pleasures of Solitude. Stephanie, thanks a bunch for being on Miles to Go.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we were finally able to make the timing work out. I obviously anticipated the book coming out and enjoyed chewing through it, especially because some of the cities that you frame up in the book are some of my favorite places to travel. And actually Paris, where you start, is my daughter's favorite city. So I got to read some of those parts to her about it and sort of like draw these pictures for her of a place that she's been, which was really cool for us. And a lot of why I wanted to have you on, because you picked, what I consider to be 4 very interesting cities. All I would think approachable even for a novice traveler. I don't think you have to be an expert to go to Paris, Florence, or Istanbul. And obviously, I love New York. So I think I really enjoyed the book because they're all places that that I enjoy. What led you to pick those cities?
Well, I wanted to pick cities that were pedestrian friendly. That was one of my first, requirements in my head, because traveling alone, I like to walk everywhere. And I'm a native New Yorker, so I'm not the best driver. That's not to say that everyone who's born here isn't, but I find it adds a layer to my experience that an added layer that I don't care to have when I'm traveling. I just want to walk out the door of wherever I'm staying and be there and just kind of go everywhere on foot. So I thought, okay, let's find pedestrian-friendly places. And I think another part of that was I wanted places that have a lively waterfront, because, again, that allows you to kind of meander and go slow and really people watch and just sort of soak up the environment of a city and not have to feel that you have to have a destination every place you go, that I have to be at this museum, or, you're just going from A to B, that the city itself is a kind of living museum that you're just moving around. So for me, I wanted every place to have some element of that, right? So that was kind of the first thing. For me, Paris was essential because the idea of the book came out of a trip that I took to Paris, in which I went on my own and I was writing about traveling alone through Paris. And it was an extraordinary trip. And it was one of those, you know, one of those trips that really changed the way I felt when I got home, not just on the trip. Like, I came home from that and I thought, I felt so present when I was there. I felt that I really took my time, that I really enjoyed things. And when I got back home to New York, I started thinking, is there a way to make my day-to-day life feel a little bit like that vacation, you know, which is hard because vacation is vacation. But I thought, was there something in Paris? Was it something about the way I traveled through Paris that made me feel that way? Like, what was that? So I wanted to go back to Paris to kind of figure that out, to do a little sleuthing and see what was it that made the trip feel so meaningful to me. And I had been there before, so it wasn't my first time, you know, when I had that experience, but something about that trip alone was really powerful. So I went back. So that was a given. And Florence I chose because I had a romantic notion of, you know, what the hillsides would look like in autumn, you know, with all the yellow leaves and the terracotta rooftops. And I just thought, I'd been there when it was summer and I wondered, what would it be like in the fall? You know, the crispness, I thought it might be sort of slower and more emptier, a little moodier. So I was very interested in seeing what that quality would be like alone. And, you know, Istanbul was a place I'd always wanted to go. There were many, many contenders for where I was going to go in the book. But, you know, Istanbul was one that I just thought, I got to get there. And I, for whatever reason, every year, I just never made it. And so I thought, this is the time. Like, you know, I want to, and also too, I sort of restricted myself for flights that weren't, you know, as far as going to, you know, let's say Japan, which I really would have loved to do, frankly. But I knew that I only had limited vacation time and there was no way to, I'd lose so much time on the ground, you know, traveling back and forth in terms of research. So I stayed a little bit closer to home.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, as you talk about being able to bring some of that stuff back to New York and, mm-hmm. You know, there was a snippet in the book. I'm going to read real quick. You know, you said, alone at a sidewalk table just after a June rain, I listen to the low hum of French being spoken around me, breathe in the scent of coffee, feel the breeze across my cheek and my hair, carrying away the last of the storm, all the things I'll miss when I'm back home. And, you know, where that took me was I'm a native New Yorker. And for a period of time, I worked in New York City. And, you know, the momentum of the city sort of just carried me. It carried me from Grand Central down to the Finance District where we're building a hotel and then back up to the Grand Central Station, grab my sandwich and on the train and home. And, you know, now that I don't live in the city, I see and hear more bits of it, sort of like I do when I'm in Paris or Rome or places like that. And so it's interesting to hear you describe Paris that way, because while I do feel those things in Paris, I've been gone long enough from New York that I now start to feel those things in New York. I feel the hum of the city more than when I lived there.
Yes, I think it's, that's one of the gifts of travel, I think, right? Where you go somewhere that you just have not become numb to, even if you've been there a few times, you're not seeing the same things day to day. You're not commuting like on the same path. So you begin to see differently. And, you know, doing it by myself, I really, you know, there was no one, you know, I wasn't chatting with someone while I was walking, you know, we weren't talking about other things. I was just like completely open to whatever was happening. And that allows the city to penetrate in a different way.
Yeah, and I'll also share with folks too who haven't read the book without giving, you know, too much of it away. I think the other thing I enjoyed about the way you captured certain things, and I'll use the Paris example. You know, we've obviously got that image of you at the cafe when it's raining, and then there's also, you know, you staring at the window of your hotel room, and there's a, you know, a man sitting in his boxer shorts on a balcony across the way smoking a cigarette, and it's, you know, that's very very French and very real.
It was, and it also, it was just delightful, because one of the things, you know, the thing that's sort of nice nice in certain cities, especially outside New York, is that the buildings are a little bit lower. And so, you know, you look out and there's a whole other city life happening at eye level, like from your window. And so I felt really a part of the street and of the city just by, you know, looking outside and seeing what everybody else was doing. And that makes you feel, you know, gives you another level of, you know, another level of flavor other than just, you know, I'm going to the Louvre.
Yeah, no, I love the way that you captured, you know, that piece of the of each of the places. And I still haven't been to Istanbul yet, and unfortunately reading that section of the book made me want to go even more. I've had a trip booked and had to cancel it for some security reasons. And it's like, yeah, gosh, like I'm just, you know, it's such on the list, and it's still what I consider to be probably a little bit more unstable for me than I'd want to go to right now.
Yeah, totally. I understand. I mean, I think one of the things about solo travel, when I've talked to people who haven't done it before, is that you have to do whatever is most comfortable for you in whatever your situation is. I mean, obviously you're a veteran traveler, so it's, you know, a different matter, but there's security is a huge, you know, concern. You have to see what's going on at any particular time and whether you're comfortable. I mean, when I went, it was not the same situation as it is now.
Right, right. I think you got there right before things started to turn.
Exactly.
And it's interesting to watch those things. And certainly with a city like Istanbul, it's seen plenty of those turns over the decades and the centuries. And I know it'll turn to a time when travelers will feel safe there. And it's sad to say, but if I wasn't married with kids, I'd probably feel better going, even though it'd be no more safe. It would just be there'd be less risk to others, if you will.
Yeah, I totally understand.
So here's the question, you know, a number of months after you've published the book, I'm curious, you know, one, because you frame up in the book that it's one of your promises to yourself, but also two, just because of my love for New York, you know, you promised that you were going to try to spend more time discovering your home city, New York. And I'm curious, have you taken the time to do that?
Yes, I have. But I will say this, I do fall off the wagon some weeks. So in the book, like I had this idea, you know, it's a version of, there's a wonderful researcher by the name of Fred Bryant who studies the idea of savoring, he means not just in a gustatory way, but like in just soaking every joyful moment out of life possible, right? And so, you know, one of the ways you do that is you're mindful when you're doing anything, whether that's, you know, you're eating food or whether you're, you know, taking a walk through a garden. So he had told me about this practice he does called the daily vacation, which was to set aside 20 minutes a day to give yourself a quote unquote vacation, even at home. And that could be as simple as, you know, taking a bath or doing some reading, but it's something you schedule for yourself and you make a promise to yourself to do that every day. And this way you also have the anticipation, you know, looking forward to that activity. So there's a lot of value in doing something like that. And I, in my own version of it, said, okay, every week when I do certain routine errands, I am going to try to see a part of New York that either I saw a very long time ago and would like to see again or have never seen before. And, you know, it could be as small as just going past a building that I always wanted to look at, you know, architecturally from the outside, or it could be going to a bookshop. So yes, I have been doing that. I still, you know, the other day I went to a cafe that I had been wanting to go to for a really long time. I went there once many years ago. And every time I walk by it, I'm like, oh, it looks so warm and inviting, particularly in wintertime. And so I made a point of stopping in and having, you know, coffee there. And there was a park that actually was just built in the city. And so a small one, but I went and wanted to kind of meander through there. But the way I look at it is it's a bit like people who are skilled in meditation talk about the fact that sometimes when you're meditating, you can't, you know, your thoughts come. That's not something you can control, right? Like thoughts intrude and you're not just sitting there with a, you know, empty mind. The practice is getting distracted and then bringing yourself back to your meditation. So I find that sometimes it is so cold when I'm walking around or I'm late and I'm in such a rush. And so, yes, I get distracted and I completely forget to see something new or have a moment, like a different experience, something that I really would have loved to do. So luckily, because I've been sort of training myself to do this, I catch myself a lot of times. So, you know, I'll be like racing through the streets because it's 30 degrees and, you know, windy, and I just want to get inside. And I think you're missing everything. Like, you're just rushing past everything. And maybe today we're not going to stop off somewhere because we don't have time, or, you know, it's just too chilly, but let's just slow it down for a second. Like, let's just notice something on the route that we're on. And that's where this has been particularly useful, even if I, you know, kind of fall off, like, because I'm finding now that I catch myself. And previously I had never caught myself doing that kind of thing. I was on autopilot.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about slowing down and noticing things, I think, you know, I travel fairly similarly to you when I can in cities, in terms of I do like the ability to walk around and see things I might not have otherwise seen. And I try to use public transportation where I can too, as well, because I just find I'm more aware and a little bit more ingrained in the city. And I think, you know, my hope for folks that are listening here, you know, as you hear the bits about, you know, weaving your way through a city and discovering things as you walk, you know, I really enjoyed the book, but I also knew you. And I wonder if I would have, you know, if I would have been quick to pick it up if I didn't know you, from the pleasures of solitude part of it. And I think the message that I'd leave with folks is, hey, you know, you don't have to be a solo traveler to get something out of Stephanie's book. The way that she walks you through a city and the way you see things is a way that some folks forget to travel, because you have that list when you get off the plane. You've got all these things that you need to cross off your list to say that you visited whatever city you're going to. And I think the book helps deliver a great message about how to absorb those things so that you have these rich memories when you get back from your trip.
Absolutely. I think I should have consulted you before I began my publicity campaign.
I don't know about that. PR is not necessarily my strong suit. So I'm curious. You know, obviously I've known you for the last number of years as your writings in the newspaper world. With this being your first book, you know, what's next? Is there another book trapped inside of you? Where do you see yourself going next?
There is another book. I'm in the process of teasing it out, coaxing it out.
I hear wine helps with that.
Oh, really? I think it was worked for many writers, and I love it. It's such a romantic notion, but I have to tell you, I do that and I go to sleep. Like, there's no writing getting done. but suffice it to say, it will involve travel. It will involve travel, but I'm still in the early phases of working on it. So I'm not, nothing's on firm ground yet.
Awesome. All right. Well, for folks who are listening in who have not bought Alone Time yet, first off, I'd say why not? But secondly, I'd say, you know, great opportunity today. I've got 5 copies of Alone Time that I'll be giving away to listeners of my podcast. And Stephanie is going to be nice enough to sign those copies for you. So if you'd like a signed copy of Alone Time by Stephanie Rosenblum, you can check out our website, miles2go.boardingarea.com, and you'll find all the instructions there on how to enter our drawing to win a copy of the signed book by Stephanie, her first. Steph, when you're not hanging out here on the podcast or strolling around the streets of Paris, tell folks where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram. It's just my name, Stephanie Rosenblum, and it's Bloom. Or you can find me on Twitter, which is just Steph Rowe NYT. So Stephronyt. Or you can go on to my website, which is also just myname.com.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from an Instagram standpoint, if you're looking for great pictures, Steph definitely has that covered. And I, from a Twitter standpoint, I have Steph Rowe stuck in my head, which is how I frequently refer to you.
I like that. I prefer it to Steph.
Love it. All right. Well, Stephanie, thanks a ton for being on the podcast. Hopefully we'll have you back again on soon. Safe travels.
Thank you. Same to you.
And we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. While we're taking a break from the show, I wanted to share a new piece of my travel gear that's a perfect fit for me. I'm always looking for ways to travel lighter. I hate checking a bag. when it gets cold out, that can be quite a challenge. I have a bunch of cold weather destinations that I visit on a yearly basis. And taking a 5-day business trip to Edmonton in January means my carry-on starts to burst at the seams with sweaters and other warm clothing. I've been hunting for a vest to travel with, and I think I found the perfect one. Bluffworks released a vest a few months ago that I just received in the mail, and I've worn it out on a couple of test trips, and I'm definitely ready to say it's warm and it's lightweight, which is table stakes for any gear that I travel with. The vest also has 7 pockets, which means I can keep my phone and my passport and headphones and all the other necessities right where I need them. Bluffworks has a complete line of clothing that's geared towards travelers. Think, you know, zippered pockets right where you need them to keep things like passports safe, easy to wash without crazy special instructions, because I'm pretty bad at washing stuff, and they come out of your suitcase looking good. Check out the full line of gear at bluffworks.com. That's BLUFFworks.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with another It's a Big Deal segment with my buddy Jen from Deals We Like, and we're talking skiing, which I think is the first time we've talked skiing on the podcast, and I think you just got back from a trip with your little ones to cruise down the mountains. Was that your first time skiing this year, Jen?
Absolutely, yeah. We actually got skiing in 2 different times in December, so kind of nice to hit the slopes early in the year.
Yeah, it is. And we, you know, we're just far enough south in Virginia where we don't get a great early ski season anymore. So it's a fairly short season if we don't get on the road. So I'm jealous watching you get out on the slopes.
I know. I wouldn't say we had an awesome conditions, but there's still enough snow. It's cold enough. They can make snow and whatnot. So it was fun. It was great. And yes, my daughter went to ski school for a few days and she had a great time and she loved it. So that's our goal.
Nobody in our family is a good enough skier where the conditions can really make a huge difference. We're all pretty bad at it, but we have fun. So
good. That's all that matters.
So you wrote about a promo, which I really like. I love these promos where folks can get things without necessarily having to have, you know, a specific credit card in their wallet or something like that. This one seems pretty easy. You know, Alaska Airlines is offering up some pretty cool benefits if you've got a boarding pass. Walk folks through what they can get, and let's go through some of the wares they can get it with an Alaska Airlines boarding pass.
Sure. So Alaska Airlines, they've done this. I know they did this last year and not sure about years prior to, but they've partnered with 12 different ski resorts all out west. And if you fly Alaska Airlines and upon getting to the resort, show your boarding pass to the ticket office, you'll get a free day of skiing, which is pretty awesome. So each of the 12 mountains have some sort of different rules. Some of them, it's you get your first free day of skiing. Some of them, it's your last day. Some of it doesn't matter. But you definitely want to read the rules for each of the 12 different mountains to see what you can and cannot do. And getting a free ski day in, you know, you might fly in the morning, so it might only be half a day that you're going to actually receive. It's still great, and it gives you an opportunity to get on the slopes right when you land. And you're kind of out and don't have to worry about that extra, you know, $100, $150 expense that lift tickets now cost, which is outrageous. And that's a discussion for another time. But it's pretty good. This is definitely a great promotion. And there are other resorts out there, too, that have similar promotions. And it doesn't matter what airline you fly, but it's resort specific. It's not necessarily partnered with a certain airline. Like Alaska has these 12 specific mountains that you'll see.
Yeah, and I think I feel like JetBlue did this last year. I don't know if they're doing it this year or if I'm just remembering it wrong. But as you say, there's more than just Alaska out there doing it. And you know, when I read your post, I think the thing I really liked about this is, as you say, it's out west, but it's a wide swath. So I mean, you've got the obvious places. You know, there's you know, Lake Tahoe and Squaw Valley and Steamboat, but then you've also got Whitefish near Kalispell, and you've got, you know,
right, Big Sky, yeah,
Billings, and you've got Spokane, and you've got Edmonton and Kelowna. I mean, just a real wide variety of places.
Absolutely. I mean, I know my husband and I took advantage of a similar promotion out in Park City, probably 7 years ago now, and that's when Park City was not part of Vail Resorts, and it used to be show your boarding pass, get your first free day of skiing free, no airline specific restrictions. And it was a great way to save some money. So even if you're not flying Alaska Airlines, make sure to go on to the mountains website that you're skiing at and see if they have any certain, you know, fly and ski deals that you might find. You never know what pops up, and saving that, you know, especially if you have a few kids in your family, and your significant other or family, friends that are coming with you, that can save you a nice amount of cash.
Yeah, you're right. Lift tickets have definitely gone up in price. You know, we continue to see that, especially as our kids age out of some of the younger passes. And you know, one of the things I think is exciting on here for me is Kelowna's on the list. And you know, for folks who don't know, Kelowna is a pretty special place in British Columbia that I didn't know much about till I had to go there for work a couple years ago. And it's just an interesting valley and a climate. So much so that they can grow fruit that you normally associate with a very warm climate, strawberries and stuff like that in the summertime. The temperatures get beautiful up there, and it's just an unbelievably beautiful place. And I really wanted to go back there in the winter and see what it's like. So, this definitely reminds me that I got to find a way to book a family trip to Kelowna.
Awesome. That'd be great. I mean, skiing out west is way better than the conditions up here in the Northeast, but you know, it's much easier to go for a 2-hour drive than get on a plane and then drive and whatnot. But yeah, we love skiing out west when we have the opportunity. But so just remember, keep your boarding pass. If you show up to that ticket office and just say, "Oh, I flew in today in Alaska," they're not going to care. You actually have to show them that physical boarding pass. So don't hand it to the gate agent or print out a second copy and just put it in your luggage or something, just so it's in a safe place. You have it and you're not, you know, trying to run around trying to find a spare copy there right when you get to the ticket office.
Yep, I absolutely agree. All right, well, thanks a bunch, Jen, for hopping on and telling folks how they can get some free skiing and save a bunch of bucks when you're not hopping on the podcast with me. Tell folks where they can find you.
Sure, you can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com, and then anything through social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, anything at dealswelike will bring you right to me, and I'm always happy to help and answer any questions. Thanks for having me, Ed.
Thanks, Jen. Safe travels and great skiing.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and for a change, we're going to talk about what's going right in the world of airlines and hotels. I've got my buddy Richard Kerr on, who wrote this article recently about what hotel chains and airlines are getting right, which is certainly a transition from your normal position, Mr. Kerr.
See, that's why I wrote this in the first place. You know, you just started with, for a change, we're going to talk about things that are getting right. We should talk about this more. And my column exists for that reason this week.
Well, I'm glad that we have something positive to talk about. And I would say I'm fairly middle of the road on this stuff. I don't tend to get as agitated as others. I will say I'm pretty agitated with our good friends at Marriott right now, and I think with good reason. But there is good stuff out there, even with those airlines that seem to not be giving us a whole lot. And you know, from my standpoint, I was an American Airlines guy for years and 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 years. Since moved away as the Elite program has sort of fallen in line with everything else. But let's start there. What are you seeing good at American Airlines?
Yeah, there are a few of these airlines and hotels I had to think a little bit longer about than the others. Like you just mentioned, Marriott. What better way to appeal to the common customer than to sit up in the mountains of Switzerland without a big coat on outside and talk about non-encrypting passport numbers? And I just, oh my gosh. But they're still doing a lot of good things right. I went off on a tangent.
I can't help myself. I can't help myself. I got to stop. How many times have you entered your passport number when you made a hotel reservation?
Well, you know, exactly negative. None. Zero. Okay. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just making sure.
Every time I go on to Marriott.com, I got to make sure I have my global entry number ready to go so I can skip that check-in line and get right up to my room. Yeah. All right. What was your question? American Airlines. Yeah. Certainly a lot that we are often critical of with American Airlines, but I still think for the time being, they're doing a great job giving us the opportunity for outsized value with partner redemptions. You're talking about Etihad, you're talking about Qatar, you're talking about Japan Airlines, you've got Air Tahiti Nui's newest Dreamliners with pretty decent availability. If you got American miles, you can go fly a wonderful flight with no fuel surcharges, except for British Airways. And they're doing it right. There's some talk about the premium economy awards coming in. I hope that doesn't give them the temptation to mess with the other parts of their award chart. I believe they just made a change in 2017 to these prices, making partners a little bit more expensive. But it's priced right. You can get a lot of American miles. Thank you, Citi. And that's what they got going for them right now.
Yeah, and I will say, as we're recording this on Thursday, they actually did release some premium economy pricing that I hope isn't real today. So we'll just have to cross our fingers and hope that those are anomalies.
I have not seen those yet. But don't get me off on a tangent, Pizza Man. That's, I got to go read about that.
I am trying my best not to get you off on a tangent. What I will tell you is that the one example that a friend of the show, Grant Martin, who writes for such lauded publications as Skift and the New York Times, showed me an example earlier today. One way New York to London, 150,000 miles for a premium economy ticket plus $284 in fees.
I have no response at this time.
Perfect. Let's move on to more positive things since we're trying to stay positive. Let's talk about Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, Southwest. The way I summarize the Southwest experience, which I wish more companies would do, is setting and meeting expectations. Pizza Man, when you head to a Southwest flight, do you have any expectations of a wonderful first class seat or meal?
Nope. I have expectations it's going to be exactly the same every single time.
And every dadgum time you line up for a Southwest flight, the boarding is the exact same, the plane's the exact same, the staff pretty much are the exact same, and you check two bags for free for the exact same price of $0. They set the expectation and they meet it. That goes with anything in life. If you have grand or great expectations of something and the experience falls short, whether it was a good or a bad experience overall, you still have a negative connotation. Southwest sets that expectation. We're not a fancy airline. We don't have seatback TVs. You're not going to get a hot meal on our plane. But dadgum, if you want to go from A to B with your family and you want to bring some check stuff so that you don't spend 3 hours with packing cubes, figuring out how to play Tetris with your suitcase, then you can come and do it with us and you're going to have a great time and get there for a reasonable price. And that is what they have going for them. And, man, I love it.
Well, yeah, and I think that's also worth noting that I can open up my 15-inch MacBook Pro in a Southwest seat, no matter what row I'm in, because, they've got enough seat. And you're right, they may not have a first-class cabin, as you mentioned, but I can type on my laptop from every single seat on that plane.
I opened up my 27-inch MacBook Sky Pro Premium Platinum Cobalt status in the 737 Max back row every time. It's no problem. There's plenty of space back there.
You are that good, man. You are that good.
Yeah, it's an oasis, if you ask me, the 737 Max.
A project oasis.
That's like the geekiest AvGeek joke I've ever made. Please delete that out.
Sure, absolutely. I promise we'll delete that out. I promise. Any other airlines you want to touch on? I mean, you even brought up Spirit, which I've continued to say nicer things about the last couple of years.
Yeah, I just bought a round trip ticket from Atlanta to Tampa for $63, and it has an 89% chance of arriving on time, which as of October 2018 makes it number one of U.S. airlines for on-time arrival and departures. Well done, Spirit. And with not traditional hub and spoke, route maps and aircraft usage, they've managed to pull it off. So, hey, look, we're going to get you there on time, and we're going to get you there for less than $100. What's not to love about that?
No, I agree. And the only problem I have with Spirit is just the lack of frequencies on some of the routes they fly to be able to use them from a business standpoint. But I'd say three or four times a year, they're the absolute right choice for me for business travel. And they, the savings are significant in the hundreds of dollars every time I fly them.
Nope. Save me $120 compared to basic economy on Delta for short hop to Tampa. So it's a no brainer. If I get there a little bit late, we'll make backup plans and see what happens.
Yeah, I give Spirit one other award too, the best truth in advertising of any airline out there, in that if you buy one of the larger seats near the front of the plane, which they call the big front seat, you get a big seat near the front of the plane.
Brilliant, right?
There's no hiding the ball. There's no, we're going to promise you this, we're going to promise you that. It's like, hey, would you like more space? Great, we'll sell it to you. Simple, straightforward.
What if every airline and hotel had a transparent marketing and communication strategy? What about that life? How you like them apples?
I could have a big front seat on Spirit, or I could have a first class experience on United where, you know, 85% of the time, the meal that they're going to put in front of me isn't going to be something I would have chosen to eat. So is it really worth an extra $300?
So I'm reading, I believe last night, a Twitter exchange where you can fly Polaris business class on a wide body from Newark to Miami, but you don't get breakfast. You get a snack. Is that accurate? Is that what we're doing now?
So it's going back and forth. The United has been dabbling with this, where they've been killing meal service on flights that are in that range. They're like in the 2 to 3 hour block time range, and they've been doing just snacks on certain routes, and they sort of bounce back and forth with it. So it's a little bit hard to tell exactly what you're going to get. It sort of goes back to the motto of, you know, don't rely on the airlines to feed you. If they put something great in front of you and it tastes good, wonderful. You got, you know, in the immortal words of Taco Bell, you got your fourth meal of the day. But I wouldn't be relying on them to give me a great meal.
Let's not bring Taco Bell into this. Taco Bell is a wonderful all American establishment that makes everything right in the universe when all else is going wrong. So please don't bring Taco Bell into this. No, I certainly don't pick a flight based on meal. I just like that you have no idea what you're going to get if you're a loyal United customer. That's probably my headache with that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think Zach did actually get a meal from that exchange that you and I were talking about, but on a similar route, 2 weeks ago, I did not. So flip a coin, and it's going to be one of those two choices. You got a 50-50 shot, let's say. That's pretty good odds.
You know where you don't get a meal on United is the CRJ-700 service from Atlanta to Denver. That's a heck of a flight right there.
Yeah, that is a heck of a flight. All right. Well, we're trying to talk about what's right, man. So let's stay on the straight and narrow, because we don't want people to assume that you always talk about the bad stuff.
No, that's why Taco Bell's a great American experience that makes everybody happy. We talk about the things that are right.
And since they're neither an airline or a hotel, we're gonna have to move on and talk about hotels. So,
what does Southwest serve Taco Bell? Would that make it your favorite airline ever?
Boy, that's a good question. I am not as bullish on Taco Bell as you are, so I wouldn't throw Taco Bell out, but I may not have quite as lofty an opinion of it as you do.
Ah, very well. All right, hotels that are getting it right. Where do you want to start?
Let's not go with the obvious choice of Hyatt, since they're my favorite and I love them. Let's talk about some of the other chains like IHG.
If you have IHG points, you can get a luxurious vacation in the far reaches of the corner of the planet, or you can go to downtown Atlanta and just get a bed to sleep in when Super Bowl has inflated prices by 400,000%, right? So IHG has everything that you need within one chain. It's not particularly hard to get a lot of points. Hotels, the luxurious ones, cost, I think, the requisite number of points. Or you can spend $5,000 for a points break, or $5,000 for some Holiday Inn Express or Staybridge Suites, and you get a clean place to sleep, asterisk most of the time. Having all that underneath one brand, if you're a loyal customer, is great. It's wonderful. They just added Kempton. Now we have an ultra-luxury chic, if you want to speak in 2019 terms, experience. And you can do it all underneath that one umbrella.
Yeah, I agree, and I haven't had a ton of time to spend at the Kempton properties. It's one of those things I keep saying I'm going to do more of and just don't get around to. But I do think it's a great addition to the ISG chain. I do think it can be tougher to get the sort of value overall out of IHG from an elite status standpoint. But I think you're spot on when you talk about how far the points can carry you.
No, definitely. If you're shooting for top tier elite status, ISG would not be my choice for you. But if you want a variety of options and you want to go somewhere in the world and have somewhere to stay for free, IHG can be your program without a doubt.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Hilton. What look in your crystal ball and tell me what you see that's good about Hilton.
Daggum, man. If you want to earn 34 points per dollar, Hilton's the place to go. Double, triple mile bonuses, co-branded cards, 12X, 14X per dollar. Oh, you're a diamond, which everybody listening to this podcast should have Hilton Diamond via one way or another. You get another, 100% bonus points, check-in points. Like by the time you get done with your stay, my moderator, Tony, in War Travel 101, stayed at a Hampton Inn somewhere in the middle of New Mexico. I think for her husband's work for like 5 nights this winter. And they got like 150,000 points after all these promos. I saw her screenshot and I was like, what in the world?
Wow.
And I thought, I'm not paying enough attention to how, you know, to get up to 34X first day. Now, of course, they can charge you 80,000 points a night, but there are places in metropolitan cities around the U.S., not named New York City, where you can stay for 30,000 points a night in a Embassy Suites or Hilton Garden Inn or even a flagship Hilton, and it's a great deal. So if you can earn those kind of points, make sure you've got all the promos lined up, make sure you've got that co-branded card, and get your diamond status either via match or challenge or credit card alone or spend on some other cards, and get a ton of Hilton points off of every stay.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I mean, my general opinion on Hilton as a brand is, I don't think they're ever going to be my primary chain, if you will, from a business travel standpoint. But I think they've really rounded some things out nicely. And certainly with the problems that Marriott's having right now, I find myself using Hilton as my backup to Hyatt more and more frequently. I think the only problem I have is, like you say, just making sure I keep track of all the various promos so I can max out my earning.
No, without a doubt. I've, to use your term, become bullish on Hilton. I think they're making quite the underhanded play at Marriott customers with the new co-branded cards that they kind of rolled out last year. Pretty competitive at the top with the Aspire and Ascend, and then making it easy to just get a ton of points. I think they're making themselves pretty attractive, and without being so direct and putting billboards up like Spirit would do that say, hey, come fly us. These other guys are no good. Hilton's made it pretty obvious that if you want some value, we're going to offer it to you right now.
Yeah, and I kind of wish, well, I wouldn't say wish, but I it does puzzle me why Hyatt doesn't do more of that, because I think that there are plenty of Marriott elites that are ripe for the picking.
That's another podcast segment. We're going to talk about what they're doing right. All right, that's what we're going to focus on.
Amen. And we've definitely covered a decent amount of what's right. In honor of Marriott and making sure that we do say nice things about them, because we do say plenty of not nice things about them, let's finish up with Marriott and tell me what you think Marriott's doing right now.
This interim award chart is so great if you can find the availability. Fifth night free at top tier properties around the world. 60,000 points, take another 60,000 off, and that's 5 nights at a St. Regis or a Maldives or a Bora Bora or Le Méridien for 240,000 points for a family. That's crazy. That's been not near enough talk about how great this interim award chart is. I can't keep Marriott points in my account right now because I think it's February 13th that the new chart comes into effect, and we're going to start seeing the peak and off peaks and maybe some games there. And some folks are telling me the IT situation is not getting any better for quite a while at Marriott. So book now, use those points, get great value out of this interim award chart. Love that they did it this way.
Yep, I do too. I'm still curious about what things are going to look like in 3 or 4 months and whether things will have returned to normal or not. But for now, if you're holding some Marriott points, it's time to find one last hurrah booking before they raise the rates.
No, absolutely is. I have some good folks, again, on the inside telling me that don't expect any great things over the next 3 to 4 months to suddenly improve. Apparently an internal debate right now about, do we start over or can we work with this legacy system? And use your points now before the new chart comes into effect.
Boy, way to leave us on a high note, Richard.
There's great value there. Just take advantage now. That goes for a lot of programs right now. The new Virgin program, take advantage now. New Virgin programs coming this summer. These award charts that exist aren't going to be around. Love it. They're doing it right. Take advantage of it now.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, when you're not hopping on the podcast with me and telling us what's going right in the world, tell folks where they can find you.
You can always find me hanging out on Facebook at Award Travel 101, and you can find all of my articles throughout the week on The Points Guy. Follow me on Twitter, Award Travel 101, but it's spelled incorrectly. It's AWRD Travel 101. And tweet at me. I'll tweet at you back.
And we'll have links to all that in the show notes. Richard, thanks a bunch for being on with us again. Safe travels.
Hey, it doesn't get any better than this. We'll see you out there.
It does not get any better than this. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. While we're taking a quick break from the show, I wanted to let you know about our monthly Amazon gift card giveaway. Each month, we're going to give a $50 Amazon gift card to one of our mailing list subscribers. As long as you stay subscribed, you'll have a chance to win each time we have a giveaway. We'll always send you the best travel info, and we'll never sell your email address to anyone. You can subscribe right on our homepage, milestogo.boardingarea.com. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies. And just a quick note of thanks. As I looked down at our folders this week for where we house all the audio to produce the show, I realized that this is episode number 50, which means that we're just about a year ago from when this all started. 50 episodes in the book. I sure hope that episode 50 is better than episode 1 and that we've learned a few things along the way. But if there's anything else that you think we do need to learn or stuff that you think that we need to include in the show, I hope you'll drop us a line. You can email us, email me at ed@pizzainmotion.com. You can also send us a voicemail. There's an orange tab on the Miles to Go website where you can click and record a voicemail for us to be played in a future show, and we'll answer your question on a future episode. And to wrap up this week's show, we are going to answer a listener question from Joe, who is trying to take his family to Hawaii. And reading in part from his email, my wife and I are heading to Hawaii. He notes that I haven't been yet, which is right. I certainly haven't, and I need to get there. They're doing this with their infant child, which, boy, that's a long flight to have an infant on their laps. Anyway, long story short, we are now considering inviting my mom to join us and was looking to book her a United flight using Singapore miles. I found Saver availability from Dulles to Honolulu, searched online on Singapore Air for the same trip, and getting an error message stating invalid flight sector. So I'm not a huge expert on Singapore myself, so I consulted with one of our frequent guests, Spencer Howard, who's part of the God Save the Points team now. He was my guest on the Now Boarding podcast just last week. And Spencer, this is right up his alley. He books tons and tons of awards and loves going to faraway places, and I'm sure has used Singapore miles more times than I can count. His note is that United releases more award space to its own members, and suggested searching using the Aeroplan website. And if Aeroplan sees the space, then to call Singapore at that point to book the ticket. Joe, hope that's helpful. Thanks so much for sending in the question. If you guys have questions, please send them into the show so we can get them answered in a future episode. Three great segments this week. Really enjoyed catching up with Stephanie. You'll be able to win a copy of her book if you log on to our website, milestogo.boardingarea.com. You'll find all the instructions there on how to enter. It's simple, quick, and easy. Big thanks as well to Jen every week for sharing a great deal with us, and for Richard Kerr coming back on and talking to us about what's right in the world of travel. We're already putting together a great show for next week, but until then, we've got miles to go.